This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, we're going to be hearing from Sarah Martin, who's going to talk about simple changes. And later on in the program, Shannon Peters will be here to give us a training tip. But first of all, there is an item of news that in the last couple of months, new cases of equine herpes virus, EHV1, have been confirmed in California, Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Iowa, Oregon, and now in Florida. And while the respiratory form of EHV1, also called rhinopneumonitis, is very common, these recent outbreaks have involved the much more complicated neurological form of the virus. So in our news segment, to kick us off this week, we're going to hear from Dr. Laura Werner of Haggard Medical Institute in Lexington, Kentucky, and she's going to give us an update on the current EHV1 outbreak.
The current state of the outbreak is that there are in some southwestern tracks and training centers in the U.S. that there's mostly has been an EHV1 outbreak there. To this date, it's still not quite controlled. There have been some recent cases there. There was also a really recent case, I think within the past few days, of a horse that shipped from Virginia to a racetrack training facility just north of Wellington. That, like I said, just happened, so the facility is under quarantine. The other facilities that in Virginia as well are under quarantine, but obviously it is a concern because of its proximity to Wellington show grounds. As of right now, knocking on wood, there are not any current situations at any of the non-racetrack facilities or show horse competitions at this time. But obviously it can happen at any time. So it's always good to just sort of keep abreast of that before you're entering your horse or shipping to a competition to make sure your horse is current on vaccinations for herpes 1 and for rhinopneumonitis or herpes virus, or you might, the vaccine is usually rhino is the kind of slang term. There is no vaccine that prevents the neurologic form of herpes. However, horses that are well vaccinated tend to shed the virus less and so may have some protection that way. So again, in the face of an outbreak, no vaccination is going to prevent the neurologic form of herpes, which is the form that we're all worried about. But again, I think keeping your horse well vaccinated, when you get to the show grounds, it's a great idea to monitor their temperature twice a day, as the first clinical sign that you might see of the disease is usually a fever. Also, just general cleanliness. So disinfecting stalls, when you get to a competition, your horse's buckets. Try not to go pet every other horse at the show ground, as often a common mode of transmission is just from people actually petting horse to horse, or it may be your groom. So like I said, just general cleanliness and hygiene is a good way to prevent it. And like I said, just be aware of what's going on in the show community. If there's a problem, usually everyone's pretty good about, since it is reportable, about getting bulletins out there pretty fast to let competitors know that there's a problem. Generally, most horse shows are required to have, especially with FEI competitions, are required to have an isolation facility on the grounds. So if there's any hint of a problem, just let the competition management, and obviously if there's a show veterinarian or FEI veterinarian there, know that your horse has had a fever. It'd be best to try to isolate that horse as soon as possible and then keep other horses, it's obviously spread from nose-to-nose contact as well as on inanimate objects such as buckets or pitchforks or people can spread them too, as well as let any grooms or help know, especially if they're non-English speaking, just try to communicate to them. Frequent hand washing just with, transmission of the human flu virus or whatever, but also frequent washing of your hands can also help. There are also some immune stimulants that in the face of an outbreak that may help your horse, so just consult your veterinarian about those type of products. But again, isolation and identification are probably the most important things, and frequent temperature taking.
Is it something where when you're walking through the horse's stall, you could transmit it that way through your shoes or through your clothing?
Yes, that is it. The virus, there's mixed reports, but it can last in the ideal conditions, it can even last more than a week on inanimate objects. So it is important, yes, to disinfect, you know, your shoes, clothing, wash your clothing. If there's a horse with a fever, try to always handle that horse last, say before you're going home. So it's at the end of the day and you don't need to go back and handle any other horses. But again, it's just a good idea anytime a horse has a fever of unknown origin, especially if you've had new horses in and out or they've been to competitions lately, to sort of practice that sort of isolation protocol right away for safe reasons.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more information on the outbreak and understanding how to protect yourself, you can go to the Haggard Equine Medical Institute website. They have a understanding and preventing document, as well as you can go to the AAEP website. You'll be able to find information on their main page.
And our thanks again to Dr. Laura Werner for bringing us the latest news on this outbreak. And now in our first segment on training, the USDF instructor trainer faculty member Sarah Martin talks to us about simple changes. Hi, Sarah. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Chris. It's nice to speak with you.
Where would you like to start?
I thought one of the easiest things, Chris, would be to talk first of all about the why behind training simple changes. And in simple changes, what we're talking about is making the transition from canter to walk and from walk to canter. And this is something that gets introduced at second level in terms of a test movement, but you often introduce it sooner to the horse. Young horses that have a little bit of difficulty finding the balance from the trot to the canter, horses who are longer in their body, sometimes have an easier time organizing the walk to canter instead of the trot to canter. So it's important that people realize that the walk canter isn't a selective exercise that only gets trained once the horse is working in a second level balance and frame, but it's a tool. And the primary focus of that tool is to start teaching the horse to collect his body. And when you think about the concept of collecting the horse's body, the obvious inference is that we're teaching the horse to take weight to the hind leg, and we're teaching them to shorten the frame. So the real function behind training the simple change is to teach the horse how to collect within their body and shift weight back onto the hind leg. So in terms of approaching that training, exercises that are useful are things like in the walk, teaching the horse to go from a medium walk to shortening the steps in walk to then opening them back out to medium walk. And when you're training something, there's always the aspect of, are you training the horse or are you training the rider? And so often in our world, you are training both. So the walk and then the shortening steps in walk, while the horse maintains his position on the line of travel, let's say we're working on the left rein, you would be keeping the horse in the left position, can do a lot for enabling the horse to understand this shortening and shifting off to the hindquarter and enable the rider to understand what to go through in their body in order to successfully execute the exercise. And what the rider will find is that they have to become more aware of what's going on in their seats and how to shorten the horse by shortening the swing of their seat and then lengthen the horse by lengthening the swing of their seat. And that is a very, very subtle movement. It's not a big move, but it really can help the rider with starting to understand what their hips are going to have to do when they're in the asking for that same dynamic. So I generally train it to both horses and riders first in the walk. Then in the canter, we introduce the same idea. So you take a horse, for example, from working canter, and then you start to activate the canter and bring the canter back for 2 to 3 strides, and then send it forward and out again before ever trying to actually make the transition to walk. So the important thing to train is the horse's awareness of the rider's seat and of following the rider's seat to a bigger step and then back into a higher, shorter step. By the same token, you're training the rider to maintain their seat in what we refer to as canter seat, where your inside seat bone is staying a little bit ahead of your outside seat bone. Your seat is imitating what the horse's hind legs are doing in canter, and you're able to shorten and increase the speed of the swing of your seat, maintaining the canter with the positioning of your leg, and then lengthen the swing of your seat and send the canter on from the position of your leg. As the horse starts to understand that, then what I generally do will encourage the rider to shrink the circle inward. So that's very much a second exercise. So once the rider gets the idea of being able to make a bigger and smaller stride within the canter, then you add shrinking the circle, and you can use, say, a 20-meter circle down to a 15-meter, 15-meter down to 12, that the rider starts to learn how to bring the horse's shoulders more in front of the hind end to shrink the circle in. This elevates the front end and, again, helps the horse shift the weight behind. So it's a third step to then say to the horse, okay, now we're going to shorten and activate the stride behind, bring the shoulders in front, and at that point, you go ahead and ask for the walk. And when you're asking for the walk, the feeling, again, is very important that the rider's seat has this sensitivity and awareness of being able to follow the lift of the canter and draw the horse's shoulders in front of the hips on a little bit of a turning feeling. At this point, it can be more toward a 10-meter circle. And as they draw the shoulders onto a 10-meter circle, lifting their hip and then really dropping that inside seat bone, holding their seat still, if they need to, accompanying it with a little bit of a touch of the rein right at the top of the canter stride, and they will find that the horses indeed very easily step into a walk. So for me, it's important to teach the horse and to teach the rider to find these precise feelings of balance, the awareness of when the canter stride is coming up, so that they're asking at a time when the horse can best make that transition to walk. It's very easy to get sucked into the downbeat of a canter because the horse's weight, of course, is shifted down. All of his weight goes down onto that inside front leg on the third beat of the canter, and that is not the time that you want to ask for the walk transition because you have all of that momentum with the horse's hips coming up and the shoulders going down. So timing does play a role as well, where you get the rider sensitive to the up moment of the canter, where the outside hind leg is on the ground, the shoulders are up, and you're asking for that transition to walk in that moment of the up beat of the canter. The second aspect of what has to happen in a simple change is not just the canter to walk, but the straightening factor that has to go on as you set up the horse to then move off in a new lead, in a new direction. So I initially will teach canter walk on one side and then teach it on the other side as a separate topic before I try to unite the two. And I think it's really important that riders realize their own body needs that kind of time, the rider's body does, and then the horse's body needs that kind of time so that the horse digests the feeling of the timing and the setup and the aid on both sides before you're asking them to do that all as one unified movement. So I really make sure that my horses understand it to the left and then take a little break, do something else, work on it to the right, get a sense of which side is easier for the horse before I try to tie the canter to the walk to the canter together. The other thing is that when you are training this simple change, it's really important to remember that although in a competition, that the ultimate execution of the movement is to canter, walk three steps, and canter, that certainly isn't how you train it. So you want to train it in a more open space and allow that walk to go on for as long as it needs to for the horse to really digest that he has shifted his weight away from what will be your new inside leg, shifted his weight to his new outside leg, and has the feeling of being able to lift into that new lead without being in a hurry. So I really work with riders on the fact that this isn't something you train for a test in a day. you want to give the horses time to be able to digest these feelings in their body and to be able to get quick at going from canter to walk, walking just a few straight steps, and then yielding into the new canter. So I would encourage riders to practice initially making a canter to walk and then heading off on a diagonal, for example, where the horse has a clear mental feeling that they're going to be able, let's say if we came from the left lead canter, to pick up the canter to the right, and that there's no sense of I have to do this within so many strides. Take the time it takes to let the horse come forward, get straight, yield, really find that feeling of yielding the horse off the right side under the rider's seat and in the horse's body before asking for that right lead canter. And initially, just do that out on the open diagonal so that the horse has a free invitation to go forward on the right lead. In a test, you may ultimately have to do that from a true lead to a counter lead on the wall, but I don't teach it that way. I train it out in the open. And then the test is, can you move it closer and closer to the wall until eventually you can ride it along the wall? Part of what you have to remember when you're training this is the straightness factor. And it's really, really important to connect the fact that the canter walk canter has that moment of straightness in the walk. That is the same thing that is going to happen when you're training your horse to do flying changes later. And part of the function of the simple changes, aside from teaching the horse to collect and take weight behind, is the setup for the flying change. So that when the horse later on in the flying change is cantering on one lead, you collect, you straighten, that straightening is his warning that he's going to make a change in the new direction. So it's important to digest that in the canter simple change, this is not something to be rushed through. You want to really, really be confident that you can canter the horse, create the walk through your seat, feel the moment of straightness, feel the moment that you position for the new lead, and then create that new lead in a balanced way. And when you can do that, you know that you've set the groundwork for being able to set up a flying change in much more secure foundation. The straightness that you allow is going to come from if we're starting on the left lead, that when you make that canter to walk, you have the horse in a little bit of position left. You allow the momentum of the walk to carry him forward to straightness, and then you very intentionally change the positioning of your seat. And for me, the way I describe it to riders is, think of your seat doing what the horse's hind legs have to do in the canter. So if the horse lead, he's been leading with his left hind leg ahead of his right hind leg. He settles into the walk. Those hips become straight and level, then you want to allow your right hip to come forward and your left hip, I think of it as sort of a lowering, almost scooping closer toward the horse's spine. to allow the horse to feel that that's what he's going to do in his body. And then when you ask for the canter, that positioning is there. They literally just follow the positioning of your seat into that canter. And again, that's the same thing that will happen later in the flowing change. They move more from the changing of the position of the rider's seat initially than they do just from the rider's leg. So to summarize, the function of a simple change is a really, really important aspect of the horse's training. Some common faults that come in with it are the horse can make a canter to walk where he really funks onto his front end. So yes, he walked, but he lost all momentum. He lost all self-carriage. There was no balance to the hind end. And we'll see this a lot with horses that come from the Western world or come from the hunter world, where, yes, they've been taught to canter walk, but it's a little bit more like canter die. And what we want is for them to realize that this is an active movement. It's not a moment to die and then come alive again, but to actually become more alive in that canter, more aware of the hind end, settle into the walk. A beautiful description is you want to think of the walk like a snowflake settling, that the horse's hind legs just find that balance and the front end settles into a few steps of walk. Then the hips lower again and lift the horse off in the new lead. The other thing, of course, that you'll see as a fault in the canter walk canter are the horses getting crooked, where they'll step into the walk, but then they're not quite clear in their body how to shift the balance, and so they end up swinging their hips or swinging their shoulders. And it's important to realize as a rider that if that is happening, it's not the horse saying no, it's just the horse trying too hard too quickly before they've sorted out the coordination in their body. And the remedy is more time walking straight. You may even leg yield a little bit in the walk to help the horse get clear in their mind about how to set their body up for that new lead. The other very obvious mistake that can be made is that the horse trots. He falls off your seat from the canter to the walk. And that simply means that you need to go back and do more homework on canter to short steps of canter back out to an active canter. Because when the horses start to know that that walk is coming, it's much easier for them to simply fall off their hips and fall into a trot. So the practicing big canter, smaller canter, bigger canter can start to address that. And then the same thing from the walk back up to the canter is the horse starts to go, oh, I know what we're doing, and they just trot away from you. Same idea. Practice the idea that you can make walk steps and then shorten the walk steps and then increase the walk steps without allowing the horse to take over the action. Then also test the reaction to your leg, that when you ask for the canter, it's a quick reaction to the canter, not a slow one. So if the horse starts to get too confident about what's coming next and taking over the operation, it's best to leave the exercise, go address the promptness to the leg by going forward and back within a gait, and then returning to the walk and again asking for the canter from the walk with a quick response. So using the simple change can set you up for developing collection, for teaching the horse to shift weight to the hindquarter, teaching him to make steps big and little. This will come in later for canter pirouettes, flying changes. Teaches the horse to become more aware of being able to shift their body from yield to straight back into a yielding format, and really does lay the groundwork for the more collected movements that you're going to do in the future, such as canter pirouettes, tempi changes, starts building that pelvic tuck, the strength in the low back. So it's an extraordinarily important movement to master well. And it's important not to think that it's just about cantering, walking, and cantering.
Okay, well, thank you very much indeed for our tip this week, Sarah.
Thank you, Chris. It's a nice to get to talk to you again.
Shannon Peters joins us now for our tip this week. Shannon, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
So what do you have for us in, by way of a training tip for dressage horses?
I think, you know, one of the most important things for dressage riders to keep in mind for the long-term health and mental and physical health of their dressage horses is cross training. And we stress it so much here at Arroyo Del Mar with all of our horses, whether it is a 4-year-old just starting out or a 10-year-old Grand Prix horse, they all are on a varied routine every week. And we find that they stay much sounder, much longer, and have far less injuries doing that. So our program tends to vary between cross-country training. We have a 5-mile track here up in the hillside that has varied terrain, has some dirt, has some rocks, has some, wood chip terrain on it. So they're going on varied footing. They're going up and down hills. And, of course, we vary it according to how strong they are physically. They may walk the whole 5 miles. If it's a horse that's like Magic, my Grand Prix horse, he is quite strong and he can gallop a lot of it and do some trot sets on it as well. And then we also have horses that just go for long walks, even just once a day outside their work on firmer ground to really make sure their legs and their bodies are not just going on the same footing all the time. We also jump our horses, usually once a week, sometimes once every 2 weeks, depending on the competition schedule. And certainly all of those things are all the varied exercises they can do enhance the horse's overall athletic ability in everything they do, their balance, their coordination, their strength, and their stamina.
And then importantly, the mental aspect, Shannon.
Absolutely. You know, and sometimes people think that mental aspect is only in giving a horse a break, and it really is so much more than that for them mentally. It's a challenge, you know, just like with us, when we cross train in some way, whether we go for a run or we ride a bicycle or go to Pilates or, you know, whatever our cross training may be outside of riding, it not only physically challenges you in different ways and strengthens you in different ways, but it also mentally changes your focus and challenges you to do something else as good or better as well. So it really has such a good physical and mental effect over the horses and effect over the riders as well. You know, it changes the rider balance, it changes the rider focus as well. And it really, we find with our horses, encourages them to go at dressage training a little more focused, a little better balanced, and certainly stronger and fitter.
Well, a very, very sound advice there to get the horse out of the arena and use the environment as best you can, because it will change, obviously, wherever you're located. But to be in that safe space, but to give the horse that chance to have a complete break from that arena discipline.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much indeed for that, Shannon. I hope you'll come back with more.
Thank you so much.
And as always, you'll find a lot more training tips like this on the website at eTrack, the USDF's online learning center. Just go to usdf.org and click on the link to eTrack. And a reminder, finally, that the 2016 Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference West with Stephen Clark starts on Monday, March the 14th at El Sueno Equestrian Center in Somis, California. Walk-ins are, as always, welcome, and all attendees are invited to join you, the USDF, for a reception at Dressage Extensions on the Monday night right after the conference. Well, that's it for this week's program. Don't forget, if you have any suggestions for guests and topics, we would love to hear from you. So drop us an email to podcasts@usdf.org. In the meanwhile, don't forget to check out all our social media channels. Look for USDF on Facebook and Twitter. Until next week, thank you for joining us wherever you are in the world. And remember that the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.